Our podcast will begin in just a moment. InvestTalk distribution is made possible by KPP Financial. Steve Peasley, President. Let's point out one of KPP Financial's investment programs. This one is the Select Growth and Income Program, handpicked mutual funds for flexibility, strength, and diversity. This popular strategy utilizes KPP's unique market expertise and adaptability to select top fund managers who produce quality portfolios for every market condition. To see more about it, go to investtalk.com. Just click on the investment tab. End of commercial. And now, today's Invest Talk.
Good afternoon, everybody, and welcome to the Thursday edition of Invest Talk. It is April 21st, 2016. The reason why I give the date, by the way, is so we can keep records of the shows, because we have to keep copies of them for the SEC, in case you didn't know that. It's all about above average investing for the average investor. That's our motto. We have this hour together to try to implement or try to persuade you to be a better investor, to fulfill our motto. So when it comes to the world of investing, there are three words a lot of people are very, that kind of describe the whole process: overwhelming, intimidating, and scary. And this is for the average investor. You know, this is what happens. So that's why this show exists, is try to make it not so overwhelming, not so intimidating, and try to make it less scary. It doesn't, see, for me, fear is not even an issue. That doesn't seem scary to me, okay? Because I know what to do to protect myself and my clients against any downfall. I mean, I can protect them. I have been able to do that pretty consistently. Now, because of that, that doesn't mean that you know, I don't always have the best upside potential, because I'm protecting against the downside potential. But that's okay. I don't mind. I'd rather have the protection. And I always refer to it this way. If you go down 50% in your portfolio, like they did in 2008, you have to go up 100% to make that up. Sometimes that's very difficult to do. Matter of fact, it is extremely very difficult to do. And so you don't want to go down with the market. It's just important. So, but there's ways to help and protect yourself. So there's a bunch of, you know, Investopedia is a great website. I don't know if you've been there, but it is really a great website. There's lots of learning tools there. They have all kinds of definitions. And they have a section where there's quotes about the stock market. One of them, you know, and I'm going to give you a few if you don't mind. One of them is from Benjamin Franklin: investment in knowledge pays the best interest. That's Benjamin Franklin. Or how about the Warren Buffett's? Everybody likes Warren Buffett. Everybody talks about Warren Buffett, how great he is. You know, he didn't have a very good year last year. Much worse than the market. But he's still the best investor out there. His quote is, be fearful when others are greedy, and be greedy when others are fearful, which is totally true. Be prepared to invest in a down market and to get out in a soaring market. That's another one of his stuff quotes. Be prepared to invest in a down market, like in 2007, 2008, and get out in a soaring market. I don't know if we're soaring. I don't think we're soaring right now, but we are pretty high. How about in investing, what is comfortable is rarely profitable. That's Robert Arnott. At times, you will have to step out of your comfort zone to realize significant gains. Know the boundaries of your comfort zone and practice stepping out of it in small doses. How about that? The individual investor should act consistently as an investor, not as a speculator. That's from Ben Graham. Intelligent Investor is his book, and he's long dead, long dead, but his book is still very, very popular. There's top 17 investing quotes of all time on Investopedia. It's kind of interesting. Let's talk about your money topics. Do you feel you have a grasp of the art of building a solid portfolio? As I said, InvestTalk is a question and answer program. We're here to try to help you. 888-99-CHART is our anytime number. So let's take on the first question right now.
Hi, Steve. Longtime podcast listener from Pennsylvania. I love your show, and thank you for all that you do. My question is in regard to reallocating a 401k. I know you speak about this a lot, but from my understanding, and correct me if I'm wrong, there's two ways to go about doing this. You could either change where your future contributions, change the funds that your future contributions will go towards, or you could change your current funds that you have invested. But from my understanding, if you do the current funds, you pay a fee. So I was wondering if you could address this and those two options and just basically explain what you mean when you say reallocate your 401k. I am 28 years old, and I listen to your show all the time, but thank you so much. Bye-bye.
Okay, there's a third option. You could do both. In other words, change the current positions you have and change your allocation. So you can do you can change your allocation, you can change your current positions, or you can do both. Now, your rebalancing is what you're trying to do, and it depends on how you being young, you should be fairly aggressive and just ignore the big downdrafts that will happen over time because it will not affect you over a long period of time. And it should not be, there should not be a fee to change funds that you currently own inside the 401k. If you have a growth fund and you want to move to a value fund, and you know, you should be able to do that at no cost. Now, some 401ks have holding periods. In other words, you can't change today and then change tomorrow and then change the next day. Some have 30, 60, 90, 180-day holding periods. Once you change, you got to hold that position for that length of time. But I've never heard inside a 401k a cost to change your mutual funds, the ones that they are offering. Now, if you opt out, if you're still in your 401k sphere, but you are self-manage it and opt out of the choices they give you and now have a brokerage account in the 401k, which is getting to be more and more popular, there's cost, trading costs involved in trading in that. But just change from one fund in the 401k they're offering to another fund in the 401k they're offering, selling one and buying the other, I've never heard them anybody charging a fee for that. So you might want to follow up and check that out. That doesn't sound right to me. Okay, and remember, I've seen a bazillion of these things. I've never seen that, so I don't think that's correct. But check it out. Check with your HR department or whoever's in charge. Now, there are, again, holding periods. If you change, you know, within 60 days of something you bought, they could charge a fee for you switching out because you didn't hold it for the length of period they told you you need to hold it. Those holding periods are disappearing. They should. I never think they should ever should have them, but good question. Now, for our talking points this afternoon, nine questions you need to answer about your 401k plan. Huh? How's that for a tie-in? So we're going to talk about 401ks here and the questions you can ask. Whether you're just setting up the 401k or taking stock of your existing plan, just like he was asking about, that we'll talk about that. Okay? Also, people are moving away from Wall Street. Investors are afraid of Wall Street. I got some, Gallup had did some surveys. I find that's very interesting. I think we need to share that with you. George Soros, everybody knows who George Soros is. And, you know, he is a very good investor, very savvy world economic. He's not an economist. I don't want to say that. He runs hedge funds, okay? Been doing it for some time and successfully. But he talks about China and China's debt problems and debt issues. So I think we should I'll read some of his quotes that he said, which I think are kind of important that maybe we all should listen to. And did you look at after hours? And I want to talk again because we're in the middle of earnings season. Google and Microsoft after hours lost $42 billion off their market cap. Loss, $42 billion, shaved 42 after they reported earnings after hours. This is after hours, so that means tomorrow morning these two are going to open up lower. Why? Talk about the earnings that is caused that. Those are things we're going to discuss today. Of course, I really want to talk about what's on your money, not on your mind, not on my mind. So you come first. The market today was down 114 on the Dow. The NASDAQ only fell 2, so it wasn't much of a fall there. And the S&P fell 11. Now, because of Google and Microsoft after hours, that NASDAQ is going to take a hit tomorrow. But, you know, that's one of the reasons why they report the numbers after hours, is so people get used to them before the market really opens up for everybody else. So the public, can get used to what the numbers were. There's been a big push as to maybe these companies shouldn't report every quarter. Of course, they have to. But maybe that's not a good idea because, you know, it just fuels speculation. Anyways, whatever you think. I still like the quarterly reports. We're glad with you. We're glad you're with us today on Invest Talk. I'm Financial Advisor Steve Peasley. You are here at the heart. You are the heart of this program. Your questions keep us on track. Now, we get questions about stocks, of course, we do. But you may have mostly mutual funds or ETFs in your retirement account. We can talk about that. How do you be certain you're well-diversified? We welcome any money questions you might have. 888-99-CHART.
Hi, I have a question on insurance regarding real estate. I have a mixed-use property with two residential units and two commercial units. Would it be sufficient to load up on property insurance and get a good property manager, or would it be wise to put the property in an LLC? Just wanted to get your opinion, and what would be the factors on making a decision? Thank you.
Well, it always is a personal decision, but if you have rentals, how do you protect yourself? Well, one way, there are several ways you do it. One is set up either a corporation or an LLC, a limited liability company. But even if you do that, it doesn't give you the protection you really are looking for. What you really want is insurance coverage on those units, which obviously makes sense. But let's say you want to have $5 million in liability coverage in case something happens. Now, not talking about the property coverage, which you always have for the value of the property, right? The coverage for that. But there's always two parts here. One for liability, someone getting hurt on the property or whatever. You don't want to be, you're going to be sued, and then you want protection. Well, what I would suggest is if you want $5 million, don't buy $5 million. Always buy an umbrella. Maybe buy $1 million for the underlying coverage with the property, and then an umbrella on top of that for the property. That will protect you against lawsuits, which is damage or fire damage to the building, and lawsuits are your two most common exposures there. Now, forming an LLC or doing a C corp or an S corp, that is a layer of protection against for your personal assets. That if you do it right, it will help protect anybody from trying to attack your personal assets. So you need that, plus you need the insurance. Now, you don't have to have an LLC. You can have those properties in your own name. Just make sure you have lots of insurance for protection. But if you're going to have a little business on the side with, you know, rental properties, I do like the concept of keeping that separate from your personal assets through an LLC. Therefore, you can specifically delineate costs and income in the LLC for that unit. This is Invest Talk, a place to talk about your money. There are so many ways to spend it, and there are just as many ways to grow it. So, well, I'm sure you have a pretty good handle on spending it. We're going to talk about growing it. So let's talk. 888-99-CHART. We will talk to Will in San Diego next. Then you.
Got a question for Steve or Justin?
I'm wondering what out there is going to work better over the next 20 years than buy and hold.
You're the best person to ask it at 888-99-CHART.
We're going to talk to Will in San Diego. How are you doing, Will? Thanks for holding.
Thank you, Steve. I was looking at this stock, and then I think it's a biotech stock, and the ticker symbol is ENDP, and I was wondering what you thought of it. I noticed it was up on a down day.
Okay, good. It is not a biotech stock. It is in the drug industry. It develops branded and genetic pharmaceuticals, so it could have biotechs, but it's not a pure biotech play. I didn't want you to think in those terms.
Okay.
It's in the medical ethics drugs, but not necessarily biotech. It has earnings. Unlike a lot of biotechs, it has earnings, and it's a good-sized company, $7 billion, and they make money, you know, so many biotechs don't. And it is at a pretty good value, too. It got hurt, got really scrunched here in the last 6-8 months. It went from $75 all the way down, you know, to $26, $27. And today it's at $31.83. It was up 20% today, $5.50. So it was a huge move up today, yeah. And the numbers are look pretty solid. They're going to make $5.82 this year. That's 25% more than last year. And then next year they're going to be up 15% more to $6.61 a share. And it's a $31 stock, so it's a 5 PE. And the 5-year range for PE is 5 at the low and 23 at the high. So it's at the low of the range. And I've been talking about deep value stocks, Will. I don't know if you've listened to the show previously, but I like this. Yes. I like this stock as a deep value stock. Okay, that's
great.
Good value. The only little caveat I have is that it has a pretty good amount of debt. And I'd want to see where that came from. Did they buy some company? Or why do they have that much debt? Good return on They have a great return on equity, 22, great cash flow. It's a growth company. Sales are growing pretty fast. I kind of like it. It seems cheap. Now, it looks like it hit a bottom, and it's coming off that bottom now. It might, Will, be prepared. It might get back. When something goes up 20% in a day, chances are pretty high it's going to give some of that back. So that probably, that'll probably be your buying opportunity when it does.
Okay, so I may wait on it a little bit then.
Yeah, you know, it wouldn't surprise me if it goes down tomorrow, gets some of that back, and maybe tomorrow buy it. You know, you know, it could also, depending on why it went up so much, and it probably was earnings. Earnings probably came out, and that's why it jumped so much, because they were good. You know, you want that. You know, so
exactly. You know.
Okay, good stock. ENDP, good stock.
Great. Thanks a lot, Steve.
Thanks for the call. Doesn't pay any dividend, everybody. It's a growth stock. That's really cheap. That's unusual. You don't see those two things together. You usually don't. 888-99-CHART, 888-992-4278. Let's talk about mutual funds. I know you don't want to hear it. I know. I've heard, you know, people like, you know, talk about other things than that. But, you know, let's talk about 401k plans, mutual funds, questions you should be asking about your 401k plan. And basically, from a 401k plan's point of view, you need to know, does your employer have automatic enrollment? Auto enrollment, that's popular these days. And I like it. Makes people enroll. Don't mean you have to put money in it, but it makes you roll. And if you do have auto enrollment, see if you have auto escalate your contributions too. You may not want to do that, but I think it's a good idea. In other words, they'll automatically every year increase the amount that's taken out of your paycheck to put it in there. Does your company match? And if they do, why would you not put money in your 401k to get the maximum match, the maximum free money from your employer? Who wouldn't? That makes no sense not to. Do you know what your mutual funds cost inside your 401k? Most people have no idea. And I have seen a lot of high-cost mutual funds. That is probably going to change with the new fiduciary laws that come out by the Labor Department. Because now, the employer, the fund manager, whoever's there, has to offer the best available for funds that are available, as opposed to just be suitable. And, of course, I never had that issue. And even in our 401k, we always offered the best funds we could get. not suitable. And what are the costs of your 401k? Have you changed your plan lately? Are your allocations okay? Are you making the right kinds of contributions? You know, there's all kinds of questions you need to ask yourself, and you better be asking them. This is important. You're listening to Invest Talk. The heart of our program is your questions, as you probably know, and we want to respond to what you need to hear, what's on your mind financially. 888-99-CHART, 888-992-4278. Please feel welcome to call.
We thank you for subscribing to our podcast, and a reminder that no matter where you live in the United States, you can take Steve up on his offer to review your portfolio. He does a few of these each month on Skype or telephone. To schedule your time with Steve, just click on the Invest Talk tab on investtalk.com and then Portfolio Review. We continue now with the Thursday, April 21st Invest Talk. Check in now with your question. 888-99-CHART. The line is always open.
888-99-CHART. We're going to go talk to Frank in Danville. How are you doing, Frank?
Hi, I'm doing good. Pete, how are you?
I'm well. I appreciate the call.
Yes, thanks for taking my call. I have a question. I consider myself a value investor, and I understand you and Justin also consider yourself value investors.
Yes.
I don't hear you and Justin, or just, you know, any others out there talking about the PEG, using the PEG ratio much.
Uh-huh.
The price earnings, yeah, the price earnings growth ratio. I know a lot of people. A lot of people talk about the P/E ratio, so I'm wondering what your thoughts about the PEG ratio and how come perhaps you don't bring it up hardly.
Okay, the reason why we don't talk about the PEG ratio is because if we do talk about it, we invert that and call it GPE ratio, the GPEG, growth to the P/E ratio. And one of the reasons we haven't talked about it recently we'll mention it, but we don't really focus on it right now, is because of what the market's doing. And you really, if you're going to do a PEG ratio, that moves you away from being a deep value investor, because when you're using the PEG, you're really focusing on growth, if you think about it. For instance, we like a PEG rate, we like a GPE to be 2 or higher, or a PEG ratio to be 0.5, it's inverted. But so we want the growth to be twice as high as the PE ratio. Well, that's right. When you talk about PEGs and a GPE, which is the same, it's inverted, you're more interested in a growing stock. And that was very good in the 1990s, and it was pretty good up until about 2008, 2009. And so the market changes on you. You know, so now, there's nothing wrong with using it. I don't want to give you the impression, Frank, that there's something wrong with it. But, you know, we have a lot of companies that are not growing very fast because, you know, with the dollar rising last year, and the companies are just not growing. Matter of fact, in 3 quarters in a row, earnings are going down. You know, so your PEG ratio is pretty hard to find something that's really good. They're still there, you know, but it's just difficult. So if you're a deep value investor, it's not going to help you a lot in this market. Okay?
Right.
Thank you. Appreciate the call, Frank. Thank you. Talk to you later. Let's go to Ben in San Jose. How you doing, Ben?
Pretty good. I just wanted to get your thoughts on a stock. It's UMPQ.
UM as in Mary?
Yeah, U as in U-turn, M... and then PQ.
Okay, usually this is Umpqua Holdings Corporation. Umpqua. out of Oregon. Okay. It's a holding company for Umpqua Bank operating. They have 382 offices throughout California, Oregon, Nevada, and Washington. So it's a bank, $3.5 billion company. They took it on the chin this morning. Apparently, maybe they had some bad earnings numbers. Is that what happened?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so it's a good bank with not a lot of debt, which is surprising. Usually banks have lots of debt because that's how they make money, by borrowing money and loaning out. They were growing very, very fast a year ago, and now this last year, they really slowed down to pretty much a standstill as far as growth. Earnings are going to be $1.25 this year, $1.25 a share. That's up 5%, and then $1.34 next year, and it pays a 4% dividend. Okay, can it afford it? Well, it's a $15.88 stock, making a that's not expensive. They can afford that. You know, 4%. You know, they can. The dividend is solid. I don't think the dividend is worry. They don't have a lot of debt. It's a good, solid bank, and it looks like they just had a problem with something today, and I have a feeling it was earnings. Other than that, it's a good bank. There's nothing. I see no warts here. That tells me, oh, you got to be careful. They did issue more shares in 2014. I don't know how many shares, but since then they have not. So it looks okay from what I can see, Ben. Do you own it or you want to buy it? Did I pay attention?
I own it. But do you ever think a small bank like this would get acquired by a larger bank in the future?
Very often they are. Very often. There's always, every so often, consolidation periods for banks, and then, you know, they go several years, a number of years where they're not consolidating, then all of a sudden they look very attractive, you know, and people start buying them, bigger companies start buying the little companies, but it doesn't look like it carries a lot of debt, so that makes it attractive to be a purchase. So if someone wanted to get, you know, some bigger bank wanted to get a bunch of offices in California, Oregon, Nevada, Washington, here's a way they could do it instantly by buying this company. So, yeah.
Okay.
Okay.
Sounds good.
Thanks. Appreciate it, Ben. Thanks for the call. Appreciate it. Let's talk to Saeed in Oakland. How you doing, Saeed?
How are you? Thank you very much. I am talking about Intel.
Yes.
They got a reported earning like a couple of days ago.
Yep. Yeah, they announced they're going to lay off, I think it was 14,000 people. I think so.
They laid off like 12,000 people, but the thing is, the estimate, you know, for earning was below estimate, right? Mm-hmm. And then the stock went up, so I wonder what happened.
Well,
so I shorted the stock, you know.
Okay, well, I can tell you the philosophy of why that would happen. When earnings come out, people react to what they think is going to be happening when the earnings come out. So they react to it before it comes out. It's called buying or selling the news. So if a stock goes up, is they buy the news that the earnings might be good. And then when it actually comes out, they sell the actual news, even though they bought the rumor that it was going to be good. So you always have to remember, investors are trying to anticipate what the earnings are going to be. And so it's difficult, if the earnings come in better than expected or worse than expected, there'll be a reaction, but it's not nearly in the direction you might think. It's only it's always the surprise that no one expected that the stock really reacts violently. And for Intel, they say, oh, our numbers weren't so good. But at the same time, we're going to cut costs dramatically by laying off all these people. The investors think that's good news. Okay.
Oh, okay.
So it's hard to know. So the earnings may have missed. The stock went up, you know, because they announced it. They announced they're going to lay off a lot of people, cut costs. And you'll find a lot of times, Saeed, when they report numbers, the CEO or COO or the CFO reports the numbers, he'll come out and say, we had a great quarter, and we made more money than we thought, but we don't think it's going to be that great this next quarter. The stock will tank. Even though it had great numbers. It's because it's based on what they say they're going to do next time. Remember, investors are always looking forward. The investors are always looking forward. They don't care about, you know, you They don't care about what you tell me today. They want to know what you're going to tell them, what's going to happen in the future.
Yeah,
that's what they care about. So I appreciate the call. That's a very good question, by the way. It's, you know, it's kind of hard to understand because you think, well, wait a minute. You know, this is what happened, and it was great news, and the stock went down. What the heck? Or vice versa. Gee, the news was not very good, but the stock went up. What happened? Yeah. So it's always what the expectations are going to be for the next time. So proper diversification of our portfolio is one of the top guidelines of portfolio management, and you've heard me talk about it many, many times. And most portfolio managers would agree with that, by the way. You can check out our info sheet on diversification. It's free. You can have it for free with being an InvestTalk insider. It's easy to become one. You can also get the webinars, all the recorded webinars if you're an insider. You can sign up free. Just go to investtalk.com. Go down to about the middle of the page. It's free.
Steve has some new checkup dates listed on investtalk.com. He'll be in San Ramon May 11th and San Jose May 25th. To schedule your time on those dates, just go to investtalk.com and click on the InvestTalk tab, and then Portfolio Review.
Investors are moving away from Wall Street. This is a Gallup poll. Ever since the Great Recession, a Gallup poll. It said 52% say they currently have money in the stock market. 52%, according to Gallup poll. The problem with that, that's the lowest it's been in 19 years. In 2007, before the Great Recession, it was 65%. Okay, and that was a peak, by the way. Now it's 52%. So all of a sudden, remember, we've had a, from that recession number, the market's done well up until last year, you know, this year. The market's done well, and yet we have much less people participating in the market. It might be because it got killed in the dot-com, you know, debacle, you know, when the market just collapsed then, and that was in 2000. And it took 3 years to recover from that. And then here in 2003, then we had another 45-50% fall in the market in 2008. So maybe people are saying, you know, it's just too volatile for me. But people are moving away from the market. And the biggest group that's moving away from the market, that is the most fearful of the market, is the middle class. Isn't that interesting? I'd find it interesting. So this means there's not a lot of, remember, what makes stocks markets go up? What makes it go up? You hear me say, well, the stocks itself, there has to be earnings. But really what drives prices up is not only just the earnings, but it's the people investing in the stocks because of those earnings. Investing in the market. If you have less people coming in, you have an issue where there's not enough ammunition being fired at the market to push stock prices higher. What happens in that kind of scenario? Well, usually the market will have a lower P/E ratio. And we don't have that yet. We have a higher P/E ratio. Why do we have a higher P/E ratio? Because the E has gone down for 3 quarters in a row. Sales have gone down 4 quarters in a row. So the E part has come down. Even if the stock market has been sideways for a year, more than a year, the P/E ratio has been going up, even though the price of the stocks have not. The P/E ratio. So that means the stock market is getting more expensive. More expensive. Isn't that unusual? Usually when you have less and less money pouring into the market, what's really is interesting, I was looking at money flow numbers into the S&P 500 and the NASDAQ and the Dow, and the money flow, even though the price of the Dow and the S&P are close to their highs and been moving up, money flow moved down. Meaning less people coming in the market, and this Gallup survey tells you why. Well, there's less people, period, that are investing in the market. Interesting. Let's talk to Jeff in San Jose. How you doing, Jeff?
I'm doing great, Steve. I have a question in regards to the symbol MAT from Mattel. Earnings reports came out today, and they didn't meet expectation. But I was just wondering, would this be a good opportunity now that it dropped a couple of percentages?
Not yet. It's still too expensive. Mattel is trading at, let's call it about a, it's going to make $1.81 next year. It's a $31 stock, okay? So it's trading what about, let's see, 18 plus 9, 27. No, it's probably around 18, 20 PE. So it's still too expensive to say, well, this looks like a bargain. Yeah, I think you have to wait for it to come way back down to the low 20s. And then it would be a bargain. Now, it pays a 4.9% dividend, and it, you know, it probably will maintain that. But the sales have been falling single digits every quarter for 2 years. So even though earnings are scheduled to go up, sales are not. And that is that's a dichotomy that you worry about. You know, so I would say no. I don't think this is a bargain price for Intel. I wouldn't jump in from here. I would not.
All right.
Okay.
Cool. Thank you so much.
Thanks, Jeff. Appreciate it. That's Mattel, M-A-T. And I didn't say what they do because everybody kind of knows that they make toys. Fisher-Price, American Girl brands, they make toys. And it's a $10 billion company. They make a lot of toys. Good, solid company. But I don't think it's cheap enough. It wouldn't attract me at this point. George Soros says China's debt is crushing them. Now, what does he mean? Well, he said he has some numbers. He says that China's debt is very, very similar to our debt crisis in 2008. And the reason why it's very, very similar, because it's all about real estate. He says, and these numbers are correct, he says their economy is about $10.4 trillion in size, and they have debt over twice that amount, $22.4 trillion debt, which is unsustainable and it cannot continue to be that way. And you've heard me talk about it. Now, is George Soros right? There are other people with opinions. My opinion is it is a big problem for China. But they can hide this problem. They have a lot of cash. It kind of reminds me of 1989 Japan. Kind of reminds me of that. Why I say that? Because some of you guys are my age, maybe remember that Japan was buying the world real estate back then. Everything was being bought up by Japan. Then it collapsed. You're listening to Invest Talk. Love to talk to you. 888-99-CHART. So to finish up the George Soros China topic we were discussing, China is still lending money, real estate money. It's still doing it. It's increasing. They haven't cut back or anything. It hasn't collapsed. It collapsed. It went down sharply last year, but then it jumped right back in, right back up. So, and there's various opinions on how bad this is going to be and when it will happen. No one knows when. See, it's always great to know, yeah, it should happen, but when? I don't know. And after hours today, we had Google and Microsoft report. Google barely missed their sales number. Their earning their sales went up from $17 billion to $20 billion. So that's how good it was, $20.26 billion. But the expectation was for $20.37 million. So they missed. Now, earnings was $7.50. They expected, the experts, $7.97. So, disappointing there. That was a 17% increase in sales, by the way. Microsoft was a bigger miss, okay? The sales fell 6% and profit down 25%. And between those two companies, $42 billion wiped out of their market cap after hours tonight. So, what will the market do tomorrow? Chances are good that the NASDAQ and the NASDAQ index will be down because of these two big, huge companies. And how much it will be, we don't know. Because by tomorrow, everybody will be used to these numbers and we'll see how much they'll affect it. Because, you know, you got think about the investors. Think about the psychology. If the Google's down 10%, let's say it's down 10%, which will be a pretty big drop, it's going to start attracting buyers to buy and then move the stock price back up. Because those people who wanted to get into it, and they'll think of it as, oh, here's an opportunity. Just the way it goes. So let's try to get one more question in before we were done. 888-99-CHART.
Hi, Steve and Justin. This is Jason from Rochester calling. Love your show. I'm a young investor with a very long time horizon, and I prefer passive investments, mutual funds, or ETFs. Currently, 17% of my fund is in Thomas White International Fund, TWWDX. That's TWWDX. And the rest is in an ETF that's an index fund for the that covers the whole U.S. stock market and cash. I'm calling to see what you think of the Thomas White Fund. I was wondering if you think I should switch to another fund. Thanks.
If you're a long-term investor, Thomas White International is not a well-known mutual fund. Is it a loaded fund? I don't know. Do you have to pay a load to buy it? I'd have to do some more research on it. If you want me to get more details, what you could do is send me an email. Go to investtalk.com, click on Contact Steve, and send me an email. And I'll look this up and get some details on Thomas White International. Whenever you see the word international in the fund name, that means they invest not only outside the United States, but also inside the United States. They go everywhere. When you see a global, same thing, everywhere. So you got to know. So I have to look this up and see. I would like to know, well, how much is where? What part of the world? How much are they investing? For myself, since I don't know much about it, it's hard for me to make a comment. But if you're a long-term investor, I would probably suggest you would stay with the major indexes, the S&P 500, the Dow. Why? Because those stocks are all international in scope. But you know that you're dealing with U.S. companies and they have to report numbers using general accounting principles here in the United States. And we are the strongest regulated country of corporations. So you can have some comfort in knowing that the numbers are right. Outside this country, you go to other countries, it's not as strong. So it makes me kind of nervous. But I'll have to look it up. If you'll send me an email, I will be happy to respond to you directly. Our time is up, everybody. I have some new dates for personal retirement reviews. These are one-hour information individual meetings. I can give you my opinion on your accounts and answer your questions about KPP managing funds. In San Ramon, I'll be on May 11th, and in San Jose, May 25th. And you can schedule online, over the phone, you know, any way you want to talk to me if you can't meet one of those places. We can do these things over the phone or Skype. Just go to investtalk.com and click on the Invest Talk tab and we'll set up a time. I'm Steve Peasley, president of KPP Financial, a registered investment advisor firm. And for Justin Klein and everyone at KPP, I want to thank you for listening today. And let's meet up again on the next Invest Talk.
Because of the nature of the interactive dialogue inherent in the format of this program, it's important for listeners to understand that not all comments made will apply to them specifically. Nothing said shall be taken to be investment advice, or shall statements on this program be considered an offer to buy or sell securities. Such advice is rendered solely on an individual basis, and at times will require that the investor review a prospectus before investing. Steve Peasley and Justin Klein are principals of Klein, Pavlis, and Peasley Financial, a registered investment advisor. For more information regarding KPP's investment advisors, call 1-800-557-5461. InvestTalk is a copyrighted program of Klein, Pavlis, and Peasley Financial, which retains all rights.